Welcome to Theatre Audience Podcast. I'm Natalie, joined by Darren, and we bring you the news, reviews and recommendations of the latest theatre.
We'll be discussing what's on, what's been and gone, and the next hot ticks. Well, good evening, Natalie. How are you doing?
I'm good. I've had a lovely Mother's Day and spent a little bit of time with my mum, which was lovely, having a little dinner. And I got a beautiful bouquet of flowers delivered from Portugal from my son. So very, very happy. How's you?
I'm really well, actually. Thank you very much. I didn't get to see my mother. She's away in Spain. But I did spend the day with one of my sisters and her family. We had a lovely Sunday roast, which I part cooked. I did the stuffing and the cauliflower cheese. You know, I'm famous for my cauliflower cheese.
Oh, I love your cauliflower cheese. It is the best.
It is the best, yeah. So I would strongly recommend anyone asking for my recipe. Well, what are we talking about this week? So I went to the lovely press event for Sister Act. We're going to talk about a new play called Blue. And you're going to be talking about...
Well, I went to the opening night of For Black Boys Who Have Considered Suicide When the Hue Gets Too Heavy, which was clashing with the Sister Night event. We were both at different things at the same time once again, which is fantastic. So it's a really great conversation. Tell me about it. Oh, we've got an interview as well. I went interviewing at the Old Vic and I was chatting to Tamara Tarré, who plays Alicia, in Just for One Day at the Old Vic. So quite a lot we've got to chat about. Talk to me about this Sister Act. I saw on Instagram, on our stories, you kind of dancing round a pole with Beverly Knight. Come on, tell me about it.
Not quite a pole. Basically, there's a kind of photo booth now where you stand on a podium and the camera spins round you and you kind of like look into the camera. It reminds me of something from like X Factor or something like that. It was really cool. And I've been a friend of Beverly Knight for almost, I think it's like 17, 18 years now. So it was really wonderful to spend an evening with her. But what they did was a really cool press event for Sister Act to launch the West End return coming into the Dominion Theatre. It's on tour at the minute, so this is a different setup completely. But it was in London last year, the Apollo in Hammersmith, with Beverly Knight playing Dolores again. And this time it was Jennifer Saunders playing the Mother Superior. And she was brilliant. But now we've got Ruth Jones. You know Ruth Jones from Gavin and Stacey fame?
Absolutely.
Well, she's going to be playing the Mother Superior. And I think she's actually doing it in her native Welsh accent, to be fair.
Is she? That'd be fantastic. That'd be so funny.
I'm only saying that because we're at the event. She did it in Welsh. She didn't do any kind of like an American accent. But if I remember rightly, Maggie Smith in the films did it in her Scottish accent. So I don't see why it actually matters at all. Because, you know, a sister could come from anywhere in the world, couldn't they? To be, you know,
well,
like in New York.
Absolutely.
Or Brooklyn, as absolutely. It is in this case. But no, but Ruth Jones was just hilarious. She was so much fun. But this West End cast is all-star, seriously. I mean, we've got Beverly Knight playing Dolores. We've got Ruth Jones, Mother Superior. We've got Leslie Joseph back in her role from before as the old batty kind of like nun. We've got Lamar. Do you remember Lamar, the singer?
Oh, Beck, you know, I love Lamar.
Oh.
Love Lamar.
Yeah, well, he's back in business on this one. I don't think I've actually seen him on stage before. But Clive Rowe, which is just absolutely brilliant, comedy gold there, playing the old police detective. Again, same role he played back at the Hammersmith Apollo. You've got Lizzie Bow, or B, I think actually has her name, do apologise. Addison Gia, oh, I really love. Carl Maloney, who you know from The Cars. Did you see that? You saw The Cars at Regent Street.
No.
Regent's Open Air. You didn't see it in the end?
No, I didn't get to it.
Oh, babe. Oh,
But I have seen Lamar live, so...
Okay, all right then. Well, does that balance that out? There was a few of them bit. There. So on stage... was Carl and obviously Ruth Jones. And then you had Beverly Knight come on, do a couple of numbers. It was so well done. And what's really interesting as well, beforehand, I was literally, because I was so early, which is unusual for me, I know, I wanted a cup of tea before went into the show. And I was walking from Charing Cross Station down to Embankment so I can go to a coffee shop there. And there was a whole bunch of nuns running around. And I was thinking, what is going on? And so as I went, kind of through the crowd and to the front, it was Beverly and Carl in their costumes with some of the other cast doing some kind of like streets, like kind of experimental kind of marketing campaign to promote Sister Act with the film crew. It was so much fun. And then she turned and looked at me, she went, oh, Darren, we go, you know, gave me a hug and stuff. It was really sweet. I got some video footage of her trying to hail a cab. And then there was really funny. I followed them around and they went to Cabaret, Chaos Theatre at the Kit Kat Club. And they're basically doing the Holy Cross and blessing and stuff for it being a place of sin. It was really quite funny. I mean, it is pretty much a place of sin, I guess, you know, good old cabaret bar. But no, I'm really looking forward to seeing Sister Act again. Like I said, I saw it, I believe it was last year, maybe in the year before, actually, at the Hammersmith Apollo. They had freshened it up. They had changed stuff at the beginning, changed a couple of numbers. So much better. I mean, they call it a divine musical comedy. It is hilarious with brilliant songs and incredible performances. So I'm really looking forward to it when it comes back to the Dominion Theatre. The press event, I think, was incredibly successful. I think there was a lot of people who was there from press and obviously other industry people as well. A lot of kind of like influencers and stuff and people from, I don't know, friends of theirs and guests and things. So there's lots of social media action going off, absolutely. Yeah. And as we said before, I did get some wonderful videos and some photos with Beverly and some of the other cast as well. But it was a really cracking evening. The cupcakes were divine. They were the most delicious cupcakes I've eaten in a long time. And what's interesting, all the cast photos were on the cupcakes. So I ate a Beverly. Ate a Beverly Knight cupcake.
You ate the cast.
Yeah.
It's like the eating of Christ.
Yeah, something like that, yeah. A bit of, you know, bit of cake going through.
So yeah, I mean, as all your stories were dropping, these videos of nuns trying to hail cabs in Soho was like crazy. I was watching them sort of drop as I was sort of like just walking along the red carpet going into the opening night for Black Boys. But yeah, I'm really looking forward to seeing Sister Act myself, because I think it was last year that I remember quite recently you talking about it on the show, on the podcast, and I've always wanted to go and see it, and I haven't yet seen it, so I'm really, really looking forward to seeing it. And another great show that you should definitely go and see, and we'll talk about it more in the next podcast, is For Black Boys Who Have Considered Suicide When the Hue Gets Too Heavy, and another incredible PR event, the opening night. The energy was absolutely electric, and was lucky enough to attend the after party afterwards. Got to have a little chat with Nika Burns and all the members of the cast and the producers, and it was just such a fabulous event. The food was fantastic. So talking about your cupcakes, whilst you were devouring those, I was having some Caribbean jerk chicken and some rum punch, and it was a really, really successful opening night. And obviously it's a Royal Court show and it's in the West End, and I really look forward to talking about this in a future episode. And I've got some interviews lined up with some members of the cast, so yeah, lots going on. And then you went to see something called Blue.
I saw a play at the Seven Dials Playhouse. Obviously, we both know the venue quite well because I had Diary of Somebody there 2 years ago. In fact, it was 2 years ago coming up. I know this month, March into April, I did that show.
Wow.
So yes, it's really coming up. It's coming up this anniversary, I guess, very soon. But no, Blue, it says Truth Hurts. And it's a very interesting take on an interrogation between two police officers. There's a lot of tension. Now, the play is 1 hour straight through, intense. And I have to say, it's an acting masterclass with the two actors. You had Boyd Sully was played by John Corella, and LaRonda Parker was played by June Carroll, who actually wrote the play as well. And seriously, it was a tour de force of acting. Two people. They staged it in the round, so there was no getting away from anybody. The only criticism I had was the lighting was incredibly, like, uncomfortable. I got light sensitive eyes anyway, so for some of it, I was kind of like blinking down. And at one point, my friend actually nudged me, thinking I'd fallen asleep. I hadn't at all. I hadn't. But the lighting was quite a bit. And I think in some respects, it kind of works because you want to feel uncomfortable watching this. It's a very uncomfortable play. It makes you feel about all sorts of things and think about lots of stuff as well. I mean, it's set in a Los Angeles police department where a young man has basically been killed. And the idea behind it is to work out whether or not the guy that had the gun, the police officer had the gun, did it on racial terms, whether it was racially motivated that he had murdered this guy. and what plays out and stuff between in the interrogation. And the interrogation again is quite interesting within itself, because the character of Luanda, played by wonderfully by June, is also his friend. They've been friends for years. He's best mates with her husband. There's all this stuff that comes up, and that kind of gives it all the layers that you need. So it's not just an ordinary interrogation between two police officers. There's actually an emotional connection by their long-term friendships and their family connections as well. It won a Fringe First Award at the Edinburgh Fringe for winning 5-star reviews and sellout runs. I think it was last summer. But they said lovely two-hander, 1 hour straight through. I recommend it to everybody who's serious about drama, who's interested in this kind of theme, and just wants a really kind of like thought-provoking evening at the theatre. Like it was enthralling. It was like it was one of those plays where you came out, I was with my friend Johnny, and you needed to talk about it. You know, it's one of those plays where you didn't just kind of go, oh, that was nice, okay, let's just go for dinner now or whatever. It was like, okay, what did you think of this? You know, where did you go with that? It was, yeah, definitely worth seeing. But the best thing I've seen in a kind of like an off West End kind of theatre in a long time, if I'm honest. So it's called Blue.
Where did you say it was? What was the venue?
It's at the Seven Dials Playhouse.
Oh, yeah, Seven Dials. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Formerly Tristan Bates Theatre as part of the old Actor Centre, which is obviously no more. But yeah, they're doing some terrific work. They've got some really cool stuff lined up, actually. There's a new play called Remembrance Day, which is coming up next, and some other stuff coming up the season. I'm hoping to do a play with music there, actually, later in the year, which is a brand new piece, which I won't talk about now because it may not happen. But I'm hoping to do another play there. But I have to say, I thoroughly enjoyed it. I think you would get a lot out of it as well. And I think it's something that if you're even a drama student would actually go and see it again, because a very intimate piece with just two actors where there's no escape, there's no hiding, there's no nothing, and you can really get engrossed in what's going on, and it does make you feel certain ways, and I think that's important. I think theatre like this is really important, and I think there needs to be more of it. So I hope it does really well. One of the producers got on stage at the end after the curtain call. And just, you know, thanked everyone for being there, you know, encourage us to use social media, which you also always should do, especially if you enjoy something, tell your friends, tell everybody, and help get bums on seats, because these kind of plays, they don't come along very often, and they're only on a very limited run. I mean, this closes on the 30th of March, and it's just had its opening night, so it's only like a 4 or 5 week run in total, and, you know, that's not long enough to see a play like this. We need more of them. And if people don't see it now, they're never going to get a chance, you know, unless it comes back again in a different format. But sadly, again, these kind of shows don't always do that. But yeah, I can see why it did really well at Edinburgh Fringe. And I can actually see why it got a Fringe First, which is something I would love to get a Fringe First. It's on the list. It will happen.
Ooh, it will happen.
It will happen one day, I'm sure.
What's meant for you won't pass you by, as they say.
That's what they say.
So, I mean, it's a really intimate venue, which is great. So would you recommend this for sort of GCSE or A-level? So A-level, you know, we're obviously thinking sort of 16+. What would you say themes-wise?
I think a 16+ would get more from it. I think they're emotionally more intelligent to really kind of get all the little niggly bits that's really going on between these two characters. Because like I say, it's not an ordinary interrogation about an officer that's killed someone. He says in the line of duty, and she's like, what was it? But then you've got the levels of the fact that the officer is a family friend, and he's her husband's ex-partner. You know, they're great friends. They've known each other a very long time. But she's chosen to interrogate him. It could have been another police officer, but she's chosen it. And then there's all these twists, and there's a really cool twist at the end, which kind of goes, ah. And it just makes you think. I won't tell you what it is, because, you know, if you're going to go and see it and stuff.
Yeah.
But I think it's worth seeing. I'm really thrilled I got to see it. Thank you, press office, for giving us a couple of tickets, but no, it was a perfect venue for it. It was great. It was front row. It was in the round, right there. Like literally, I was being spat on by the actors. I was that close, and I didn't mind at all.
Excellent.
But hopefully, I'll get to have a chat with June Carroll at some point for the podcast. I think it'd be a really cool interview. So hopefully lining that up. So let's see if we can make that happen.
We've got loads of interviews coming up, haven't we? Just so many.
That's one of our things. It's one of our unique selling points.
It's so exciting.
We like talking to people in our profession. We like talking to actors and creatives, producers, all that kind of stuff. You know, our listenership, they enjoy, we hope,
absolutely,
these interviews.
Absolutely.
And it's nice. It's a really fun thing to do. And, but yeah, so let's see what happens. But you had a wonderful chat with a young actress in Just For One Day, who actually played Madonna, didn't she, in Into the Groove, she's saying?
Yeah, you loved that, because when we did our review of the show, you singled her out and said that you really liked that moment. And I think that's quite interesting, because you'd just literally been to the Madonna concert, not, you know, less than a month beforehand, I think, as well. So, yeah, Tamara Tare, absolutely fantastic, plays Alicia, but predominantly ensemble, but all of the ensemble characters are given names. And she plays this at the Old Vic, and the production is Just For One Day, which closes on the 30th of March. I really hope it has more legs. I would love to see this again. I'm trying to find a way to, but there's literally only single tickets dotted about. And so I'm just living off the hope that I can get a return one day and find a day where there isn't an interview or another piece of theatre to go and see. But I had such a lovely time. Such a wonderful individual right at the beginning of her career. This is her professional debut, and she's got so much talent, and I look forward to seeing where she ends up in the future. So I hope you enjoy listening, Darren. So I'm backstage at the Old Vic Theatre with Tamara Tare.
Hi.
Thanks for coming on the podcast.
Oh my gosh, thank you for having me. Yeah,
and we're talking about Just For One Day.
We are, yeah. I mean, it's been incredible to be a part of. We've got about 4 weeks left now, which feels crazy. It's gone so quickly. We started rehearsals in December, beginning of December. And yeah, it's just gone so quick, but I'm having a great time. It's such a fun show to do every night. The cast are amazing. And yeah, it just feels really cool to be a part of. So
I love the show. I was raving about it sort of 3 podcasts ago.
Yeah.
And it feels like just yesterday that I saw the show. And now I'm like, it closes on the 30th. I need a ticket.
Yeah.
And then I'm on the website and I can't find 2 together. It's pretty much nearly sold out.
Pretty
unless you
much.
Can grab one of those £180.
I know. Tickets. I'm all
the really... Yeah, the ones are right up at the top. Not sure about the legroom situation for myself.
Yes. But. I mean, they do have a hack, actually, is because on the day, they have a lot of resales in the morning.
Ooh.
And also today, Tix, actually, I've got some friends that have got some tickets for £30 in the stalls, in the middle
okay.
of the stalls. Mm-hmm. So it's that sort of like the last minute thing. Like you can get tickets day before or the day of if the people have like refunded and they truly get rid of the tickets.
Fabulous.
Yeah.
Okay. Good. That's, top tip there, everyone.
Yeah, top tip.
So tell me about your journey to this production. So this is your professional debut.
It is. Yeah, it's been crazy. I mean, so I graduated from the Royal Academy of Music back in like July of 2023. Had 4 months of just, you know, auditioning, getting my foot in the doors and like just sort of... Yeah, here and there. And it was actually really funny how I auditioned for this. I think I'd got to a final of yet another West End show and I didn't get it. And I was like, you know what? I'm just going to go on holiday with my family, with my mom. And my agent sent this through to me. And I told him, don't contact me. Don't tell me about any auditions or stuff before I come back. And before I got on the plane, he sent this one through. And I was like, oh gosh, okay, I guess... I'm going to have to do a self-tape in Dubai or in a holiday in a hotel room with my mum. I had the lights off. My mum was sat on the hotel bed while I was like doing the self-tape and she was in the dark and it was a whole thing. I owe my mum so much. I bought her the tickets to come and see this because I'm just like, yeah. But yeah, so I did the self-tape. And then within 2 weeks, I had a Zoom call with Luke Shepherd and Stuart Burt, who cast it. And the week after, I was in the room, in the rehearsals, and...
Wow.
Yeah, yeah.
That's speedy.
It was really, really speedy. I was really surprised at how fast
yeah.
the process was, but, I mean, I'd seen Stuart quite a lot before.
Right.
I'd not met Luke before. I actually only met him on Zoom before I slipped into the rehearsal room as well. So that was a really interesting dynamic. But Luke is an amazing director. He's got such a great way of making such a healthy room and making it very collaborative. One thing about the show is that it has everyone's fingerprints on every single part of the production. And that's down to Luke being open to so many people's suggestions. And also, I would say that every character, including my own, I got to pick my name, Anisha.
Did you?
Yeah.
That's where the name came about.
Yeah.
Obviously, the whole cast are ensemble, pretty much, with one or two people who sit, like the Bob Geldof character, and then the old and young, a main storyteller.
So Bob Geldof is obviously based off of an actual person. Same with Harvey and Midge, of course, as well. John Kennedy as well. But the majority of the...
And Margaret Thatcher.
Oh, Margaret Thatcher, yes. Obviously. Yes, and Margaret Thatcher as well. But yeah, the majority of the cast are just... sort of extensions of the actual person playing the role. And it goes down to costume as well and character names. And Luke was just really, really good at identifying someone as a person and picking out really cool parts of their personality that can be injected in the show. So yeah, and there's lots of other little cool parts as well where it's like he come up to you and be like, okay, we need this sort of vibe, can you sort of improvise something in the room? And then
because each song, each artist has obviously a different feel, a different genre. So it was great to see that. And there's moments because you've got your mic and your little holster you can put your muscles into, and I was like, oh, I reckon this is her audition for Six.
That'll be her next show.
I can so see you because you had the little, was it a little
skirt? Oh, your little
and your outfit. I thought, all we need to do is add a little bit of diamante, some kind of headdress.
Yes.
And then,
you know, she's alive.
After March, that's where she's sitting.
I mean, fingers crossed, I would love to be in Six. And I'm also surrounded by some incredible Six icons. Like, you've got Danielle Steers and Colette Tart. And yeah, they're phenomenal. Like, I've learned so much from just watching everyone in the cast and asking them, about their, vocal warm-ups or, how they approach a script and just little things that, it's just so personal to everyone, but you just take what you can get because everyone is amazing, has fantastic resumes and great experience. For me, as like a graduate, it's probably one of the best first jobs I could have asked for, really. So
yeah,
having a great time.
And just having the band on stage as well.
It literally feels, you can feel the music like vibrating through you, especially when you're dancing through it. Like one of my favorite moments, two of them musically, is In the Air Tonight, because I get to dance on all sides, and when that drum beat is going, it just feels so epic. And I Don't Like Mondays, the drums in that section, particularly towards the end of the song on the stage, it just, there's no other feeling like it. And you're just there with the whole cast on stage just rocking out while Craig or Eddie, because they both play Bob and Eddie covers Bob, but when they're just there, and it's just feels so surreal and epic, and everyone's together, and they're really cool.
I just remember when I came to see the show, the lights went down, boom, this bass, the sound,
just like a volley.
It really was, and immediately I had that goosebumps on your arms. Mm-hmm. You don't often get that. I mean, I love musical theatre, I love theatre. But I've been really treated recently. I've seen there's some great shows open at the moment, but there was something about that moment, and I was like,
here we go,
the beginning of a roller coaster. Yeah. Like, here we go. I love it. And I have my son next to me, who's 18. And, for me, I mean,
you're very young.
But in 1985, I was 8 years old.
No way.
Yeah, seven or 8 years.
7 years old.
I remember dancing and watching the concert on telly. It was on telly, and I remember with hair, standing there dancing away. I do remember seeing the images interspersed of famine, and I remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I think there's loads of people in the audience, you know, very eclectic age mix. And there's a bit at the beginning where they say, is anyone there? Everyone there? Oh, God, there's men on the dress circle and in the stars. And she was like, I was there. Yeah. And she had her arm in the air and she just wasn't seen from the stage. And she was like, oh. And she sat down and it was a little bit, she kind of went on a little bit too long, but you could tell she so wanted to be seen. And she was wearing her t-shirt,
really? Live. Oh, we get that every night. Mm. I didn't realise that would be a thing as well, because we sort of just, I think that was added quite later into the show, asking the audience if they was there to create the, you know, the conversation.
Energy.
Yeah, bring them in, get the energy of anyone who was there to let them feel involved in it. And the response we get every night, oh my gosh, some nights people are literally like stood up, like, yeah, I was there. Like people pointing at their friends.
It's on the front of
you. Yeah, it's crazy. I think I really underestimated how much of a response that particular part in the show would get. Mm. But yeah, it's just great to see so many people enthusiastic. I actually didn't know about Live Aid before I did this job. So
it's been
historic. I learned so much from it. And also because I cover Amara, who's the British aid worker. Mm-hmm. So from like analysing her script and like the monologues that she delivers,
yes.
As well as like learning about historically about it, I've learned the feeling of it and had to do the research of like how it felt to be out in Ethiopia and experiencing all of this. And it's opened my eyes massively.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's just such a beautiful show. Mm. And it is like being, it's theatre, but it's like being at a concert. And it is musical theatre, but obviously it's like a jukebox because it's songs that we know. But the arrangement is beautiful. There's harmonies.
Oh, Matt Frind, musical scene advisor, an absolute genius. Like I don't know how his brain works. Mm. You're in the room with him and he's just creating these incredible harmonies that are just like crunchy. And then they just, yeah, it was a real insight into just looking at a genius. Yeah. Like it's amazing,
because for the audience and especially the people that were at the concert, we know those songs, we want to hear them how we know them.
Yeah,
but it's got that twist on it.
Yeah,
that makes it new again.
Yeah, I think it's lovely, particularly my generation. Like this, I think I kind of knew of that solo beforehand, but obviously I listened to the solo and I listened to the arrangement. Like, whoa, like two completely different takes.
Mm.
Something else I love as well, Blowing in the Wind. And you really listen to the lyrics and they found such a really clever way of allowing the lyrics that were made in a completely different context to then relate to the show and drive the narrative.
Yes.
And drive the story, which just... it really astonishes me, but it's been honestly just so great to be a part of and like actually watch the process happen. It's inspiring.
Yeah, really, really. Because Luke Shepherd's show is brilliant because I loved Anne Juliet. And again, it's a jukebox musical. We are using the songs. We're changing the lyrics slightly. We're making it drive the narrative. It's fitting certain characters, certain situations. It's retold anew.
Yeah.
So this is obviously, his
spread of that herb.
Yeah. And, I'm excited to see what he does next.
I know.
Yeah. Have there been any sort of happy accidents that have happened in rehearsal stuck?
I mean, things that all went well, the happy accidents that didn't stick, but we all wish that did. There was one point where Joe Foster, they had held the side upside down of Live Aid during one of the concert bits. We were all like, let's just keep that one in there. But no, that didn't happen. But I can't really remember if there are any accidents, really. Or there was one point where, like I was saying earlier, Luke, he came up to me and he was like, we need to make this bit a bit more American before We Are the World. So he made me improvise and I became like an African-American lady. I was like, sing it, people. Come on, let's do it. And then they were like, oh my gosh, that's a bit too much. But at the end of that bit, I just say, wrap it up, people, take a five. And that's where that came from, essentially. Just from me, like, improving, being like, almost Diana Ross-like. Nice. But yeah, that was something that stuck in the show that I didn't think was going to happen. Also, I rapped to King of Rock.
Oh, yes.
My Run DMC.
Yes.
And I remember they brought this rap and they didn't know how they were going to put it into the show. So everyone in the rehearsal room rapped it together at one point.
And I just saw Luke Statham sitting there, like, thinking,
quite right.
And yeah, then he asked if anyone was comfortable with rapping, and I was like, well, I'll just put my hand up because, you know, why not? And also, then DMC is a group, so I thought they'd be doing it with people. But lo and behold, that wasn't the case, and I ended up doing it by myself, which is a bit daunting, but everyone was really supportive in the house, in the rehearsal room.
No, I know that bit.
Yeah.
It reminds me of being a little girl and trying to rap, not managing it very well at all, and not getting all the words around the wrong way.
Yes.
You only really had the lyrics. You couldn't just Google the lyrics. That was so not a possibility then. Saying I just make the lyrics up.
Yeah.
And so unless you had the LP and it had the words in it or inside the tape cassette, really small, written, you had no idea.
Oh, gosh, I didn't even think of that.
Or in Smash Hits magazine, I think they would sometimes put the lyrics, which was like the magazine that all the teenagers had, but I wasn't there yet. Okay. So you went to the Royal Academy of Music.
Yes.
Graduated.
Yes.
In Dubai, doing your audition,
you got this,
and then start rehearsing.
Yeah, straight away.
And so, but on the in the program notes, it says that you did Romeo and Juliet, Giselle, Swan Lake, and Don Quixote. More ballet?
Yeah. So a lot of people get confused because people initially think that I'm a ballet dancer, which I am not.
Because you're a great dancer. Well, so I thought, oh, that's her background.
Yeah, that's another thing, actually. I'm not a trained dancer.
Are you not?
No. So I went to the Royal Academy of Music, which is predominantly for acting, singing. They do have a great dance training there, but it's not the focus.
Mm.
So my dance training actually came from just doing Saturday schools and, yeah, going, when I was at university, I joined like a hip-hop dance group. So that's the extent of my training. But I actually joined the Royal Ballet as an actor.
Right.
So, yeah. So I was just acting alongside the ballet, doing any sort of, like, gestures. At one point, I used to be, like, a sort of a royal duchess. And then you go from royal duchess to literally being, like, a towels lady dressed in, like, a carpet with you. It, honestly, the amount of costumes they had at the Opera House, it was amazing. But, yeah, it was such a great... The great productions to be a part of.
It was an amazing venue.
Oh, it was,
wow,
beautiful. So, so beautiful. And yeah, it was just in the heart of Covent Gardens. It was really, really lovely. I think working there also made me, because it was my first ever production I'd ever done.
Right.
It was the first stage I ever stepped on. And that was
lovely. That's not a bad stage.
Not a bad stage at all. Yes, at all.
Royal Opera.
Yes, yeah. It was really, really great and really fun. But it was great for me to get used to being on a big stage and being at the sides. And I wasn't the dancer, so I was never at the forefront of the focus.
So it's kind of ensemble.
Yes, very, very big ensemble.
It's pretty much the set. They have quite a big cast.
Yeah.
And I mean, they have got set, but
yeah.
Yeah. The venues change so frequently. So yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. So did you get to speak in these roles?
Not in the
obviously, if it's ballet. It's,
yeah, just, yeah. So there was no speaking. It was more so like choreographed walking. Well, you'd bring massive things on. The dancers interacted at certain points, like if they needed like a bread cell or something. Like honestly, it was like little roles like that. But it made such a difference because you have these massive things. Or I had some friends that would do puppetry. So in Don Quixote, there was a massive horse that would come through. And some of the actors, they would be sort of maneuvering the puppet horse, which, so I say it's a puppet, but it was almost like a war horse. Like it was.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was extraordinary. Yeah, it was great. But yeah, there were just so many great opportunities with the Royal Ballet. And yeah, it was just really, really nice to be a part of. And that was my first step into theatre, which made me realise, oh gosh, like I really want to do like sing and dance and act on a stage, let alone just sort of being on the sidelines. And that yeah, was a really big eye opener for me.
I think that's the great thing about this production as well, is that most of the cast, not everyone, gets their individual moment to shine as well. I think a lot of those happen more in the second act, from what I recall.
Yes. I mean, Luke was very, very vocal with making sure that everyone had either a soul or a moment. I think everyone has a soul and a moment to just showcase themselves, which is really, really nice as a ensemble member, because you just feel like you're a part of it and you're driving the story along. And
when I found out that I was going to be singing Madonna initially, I was quite intimidated. Also because I just feel like I'm quite different to how Madonna is, you know? And actually the scandal with that is we didn't get the rights for it for a long time.
Right.
Like even we're talking about previews that opened and we still hadn't had the rights. So every night I would sing that song and be like, right, this is it. Madonna's going to say no. The soul's not going to go through and then I'm never going to sing it again.
Oh.
But oh no, we did get the rights in the end. But yeah, it's just really, really nice to see everyone able to express themselves through a song that really suits them and has been changed to suit people. And also just for the audience to enjoy it and listen to the lyrics in a different light.
Yeah.
So
it's just such an uplifting production.
Yeah.
And I think for younger audiences, because obviously you've got that the younger character who goes through it, and she,
oh yeah, that's Gemma played by Naomi.
She kind of brings that relevance to a younger audience. So I was kind of like looking across at my son, going, "There you go. There's your through line connection there."
Yeah.
It's just, I think there's something for everyone.
Yeah,
and I'm desperate to see it again. I really hope that it has longer legs.
It needs
to. I'm sure it will.
Yeah.
With Nick Shepherd at the helm. Maybe it'll go to Broadway or something.
Oh, gosh. But that... you know what? I always wonder, because I'm like, gosh, I wonder how the American audience would perceive this. Because it's very, very British.
Yes.
And even thinking about how we've injected songs like We Are the World, or we have a little bit before Blowing in the Wind, where we have the American radio come out and be like, oh, we've got a concert in Philadelphia, but also a second concert in London. And it's like, that's the object.
Yeah.
Sort of jokes where you'd have to retranslate them. But yeah, there's no news on like a transfer or anything. But so we're just, you know, waiting to see what happens.
Yeah, well, I mean, the tickets have sold really. Yeah. I mean, it was hard to get tickets in the first instance, and that was a couple of months ago.
It was hard, even when I joined in still in rehearsals, I was like, oh gosh, I just have to book my friends and family now, and it's not even the next year. It was just crazy. But yeah,
I remember the people next to me on the way out, there was just such a buzz and people humming stuff as they walked across the road afterwards. It was really lovely. She was like, did you love it? Did you love it? And just this random stranger saying to me, did you love it? I was like, I loved it. Did you love it? And she was like, yes. I was like, we loved it. So it's, yeah, brilliant.
Oh, that's nice. I think another thing that I would love for people to take away from the show is the actual message.
Mm.
And because obviously the story tells of how Band-Aid was created, why it was created, and how that stemmed onto Live Aid because of the famine that happened in Ethiopia. And it's just so relevant with what's still happening in the world today. And I really just hope that's another reason that really drew me to the show. When it first came as an audition and I looked at the monologue that I had to deliver as Mara, I just thought, gosh, wouldn't it just be spectacular to be a part of the musical that won? You love the music, but also you're pushing a narrative into the mainstream sort of world that can actually sort of make a difference or spark those conversations and ignite those conversations. So yeah, for me, that's something that really drew me to this production, just making sure that people understand that, you know, there's so much more to life that's going on in the world. And I remember rehearsals, we used to have conversations and we would chat about how, you know, people see Africa as just one massive place. They don't really know. For instance, you've got Egypt in the north and Morocco, but then you've also got South Africa and Zimbabwe, Nigeria in the west. Like, it's so diverse. Ethiopia in the east, obviously, but people just love it as one massive place. And that's something that, for me, I felt really passionate to sort of drive into the show. And that's my little fingerprint there. Like, mm-hmm. Having those conversations with Naomi as well, and Abiona, who plays Amara. And yeah, then feeding that back, it's just been really, really nice to see that that's been important in the show. And I hope people take that away as well.
And that's why, you know, I wish the show was on for longer, because as an educator, I take students to see shows all the time. And much as musical theatre per se isn't on the syllabus, I do take the students as well. They're lucky enough to be in London, and so we go and see as much as possible. But yeah, for exactly the same reasons that you've just said, that's why I think this kind of production is so incredibly important for young people to see. And that's why I just wish it was running longer, because I think by the time all the drama teachers catch up with, it's gone. Yeah. And then it's too late. And it's one of those shows that you just think,
I wish.
Hope it comes back. You wish it was there, because you would, in a heartbeat, it would get booked up again with theatre trips.
Yeah.
And it's a really important production. And also, it's such an ethnically diverse cast as well. So, yes, we're setting it in 1985, but we're also thinking about all theatre policy for now. And I think it's so important for the young people today that are sitting in those audiences with their drama teacher going, I see myself represented on that stage. I could do that too. I want to be up there. So on many different layers.
Mm-hmm.
Great show. It's only got until the 30th of March. So if you can and are happy to go on your own and get one of those random tickets, sat on your own, please, right down by the front of the stage, then come and see it. And keep in touch. I'm looking forward to seeing what happens next for you.
Thank you.
If you get that part in six. Up on the sit front row.
Yes.
But yeah, thanks for chatting to us.
Yes,
and good luck for the future.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate it.
Why not grab a ticket to one of the shows mentioned in this podcast? Tune in next time and recommend us to your friends and family.
Follow us on Facebook and Instagram at Theatre Audience Podcast and on Twitter at Theatre Audie Pod. Until the next time, goodbye and thank you for listening.